Okay, let's move on then to the afternoon agenda, which starts with 1207.
Accept the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission State of the City Preservation Report.
Commissioner Salzman.
Thank you, Mayor. It's a pleasure to bring forward the 2015 Historic Landmark Commission's State of the City Preservation Report. But the first item of business is to thank the dedicated volunteers who serve on the Landmarks Commission. This commission meets a minimum of twice a month and often for many hours as they review land use cases and provide advice. They are a very hardworking group, and I'd like to call out their names, and if they're here, if they could please stand. We have Brian Emmerich, the chair.
There he is.
Jessica Ingeman, vice chair. Karen Carlson. Okay. Kirk Ranzetta. Great. Paul Salomano. And Carolyn Dow. Okay. Well, we thank you all for your hard work. And this is the commission's seventh annual report before council. But the Historic Landmarks Commission has been operating in the city since 1975, providing leadership and expertise on preservation, enhancing Portland's historical and architectural heritage. This report comes to council at an important time for the city and its historic overlay districts. With our pending adoption of the comprehensive plan and the amount of construction and growth our region is seeing, there's no better time than now to hear from this distinguished group of experts. Senior Planner Paul Herron will start off, and then he'll be joined by Commission Chair Brian Emmerich, and who will take the helm. So, Tim, Brian, take it away.
Thanks. Tim Herron, Senior Planner. I am just simply going to speak for Director Paul Scarlett and just acknowledge the commission and introduce just this one item. The commission not only reviews land use cases, but they also do a variety of advocacy work in terms of inviting different bureaus or other jurisdictions to present before the Landmarks Commission on a variety of issues. So the commission has been working very hard on developing new design guidelines for Skidmore Old Town. They've been working hard on the Ankeny Alley expansion with PBOT, the comprehensive plan update, and more recently had a Survey LA team that's recently completed a historic resource inventory in LA up to present their efforts and how to spearhead that. So without further ado, I'd like to hand it off to Brian Emmerich and Kirk Ranzetta.
Okay, come on up, gentlemen. Good afternoon. Thank you for being here.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us. I'm Brian Emmerich, Chair of the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission, and to my left is Kirk Ranzetta, and we're really honored to be in front of you. This is my final address to City Council. I'm in my eighth year of service, so that ends in December. But it's been a real honor and pleasure to contribute at the Landmarks Commission and be a responsible steward of our past there.
Final presentation on this volunteer job.
Correct.
Who knows what we'll tap you for next year? You'll
right. There'll be more on that later. Just got your email, Commissioner Fritz, the other day, so I'll be responding on that. So over my tenure, I've had the good fortune to review a wide array of significant projects, including Mercy Corps, Washington High School, Waterfront Park, the White Stag Sign, most recently the Mount Tabor and Washington Park Reservoirs, and the Grove Hotel in Chinatown. And I've also presided over the first four Type 4 demolition review proposals, including three in the last year alone. And I'm happy to report that the process really is working. Finally, I've been able to contribute at a number of high-level policy panels representing the Landmarks Commission, including most recently the West Quadrant Plan and the Unreinforced Masonry Seismic Task Force. I can honestly say these experiences have given me the confidence to believe we're headed in the right direction as a city when it comes to preservation policy. However, I think we can and should do more, and we need your help for that. In a report that follows, we're going to outline our strategic objectives that we can achieve collectively given the right investment of energy. We have an incredible dedicated body of professionals that make up the Landmarks Commission who volunteer countless hours to help us carry out our city's mission in preservation. We share a passion for working toward the collective good and leaving this place better than we found it, which I think we're all trying to do as a city. We continue to ask for the city's support in making the most of this effort, for current and future generations of this beloved place we call home. So I'm assuming you guys all had a chance to read the report. I'm not going to go through all the details. If you guys have questions in there, certainly inquire us on that. We've got a PowerPoint presentation where we're just going to hit some of the high points and have just a little bit more of a free-flowing dialogue, I guess. Let's see if this works. Wow, that really stretches us out there. So there's a non-flattering picture of the commission, and you can kind of see who we're made up of. We've got a historian, historical architect, real estate, historic development professional. We've got a vacancy right now, Commissioner Matarazzo, our attorney, archaeologist, neighborhood advocate, and myself, who's a trained architect. This next slide shows really what our purview is in terms of designated landmark districts. Those are the gold-shaded areas, as well as nationally listed and locally listed historic landmarks, which are the red dots. So all of that's really the purview of the commission when it comes to case hearings. And some of the highlights that we accomplished last year, we'll talk a little bit more toward the end of this, but one is Skidmore Old Town Design Guidelines. That's also, ironically, one of our priorities. We got those forwarded to staff to be sent to you guys for approval at your direction in last year's preservation address. And they're ready to go. They're just getting some final tuning. They've just got kind of waylaid with staff resource issues. So, but we're expecting those are going to come to you guys in January at this point of 2016. It was my goal to get that done while I was on the commission, so we're not missing by too much, but I want to see that followed through. And then the Unreinforced Masonry Seismic Upgrade Committee. So, Commissioner Novick, thank you for spearheading this. I served on the Technical Advisory Committee. Vice Chair Jessica Ingeman served on the Feasibility Committee. And then I recently just got your invite to serve on the Policy Committee. So I'm looking forward to helping with that and seeing that through.
Thank you.
Yes, it's a huge important issue on both sides, public safety, but also our cultural resources and how to get that best balance there. So. And then, of course, the demolition, that was a big deal when we came here last year. And we've definitely made progress, I think, as a city on this with the DRAC and, you know, kind of getting some of those loopholes closed. Commissioner Dow served on the DRAC Advisory Committee, so that's been great. I think now we really need to start thinking about what's that next level of policy, though, to think about in terms of density and balancing livability and, you know, solving for that more of the broader planning spectrum, which Commissioner Renzetta is going to talk a little more about. So we've got five priorities outlined in the report. The first one is the preservation planning position.
Yeah, we wanted to thank the council for creating this opportunity for a planner position within BPS. Here the interviewing process is currently underway for a candidate within this program. And what that position will do will help to, create a historic preservation program within the city that will put it on par with a lot of the other cities of similar size on the West Coast, if not in the United States. And I think that is certainly one of the priorities that we felt as a commission should come to the fore. Demonstrating that commitment to creating a program is a significant step in the right direction.
Yeah, I'd say one of our key charges really is policy-based. Everybody thinks about the Landmarks Commission when it comes to case-based, which is really the BDS side of things, where we're looking at potential additions or new projects within a historic district. But we're also responsible for writing design guidelines and thinking about those bigger planning areas, and that's where we really need support from the BPS side. So this would be a planning position in the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And it would allow us to be able to continue that good energy going forward. Since we're a volunteer-based commission, you know, we lose commissioners like myself periodically, so having that institutional memory housed within the city is really important to be able to maintain momentum on long-range preservation and planning ideas. Priority two is the design guidelines, so I kind of touched on that with Skidmore Old Town. This has been on the list really since I've been on the commission. We're really excited to be getting Skidmore Old Town done and before you guys. The next up, really all of our design guidelines are pretty outdated citywide. In some areas, we do not have design guidelines. And of that, most important is Chinatown Historic District. A lot of people aren't aware of that, but there's really no design guidelines there. And we're at this wonderful crossroads right now where finally things are happening in Chinatown. There's some great projects. One our firm's working on, the Grove Hotel just went through. And yet there's really no design guidelines to kind of shape that discussion about what we want to have as a community there. And So we're really pushing PDC. I understand it's got some funding assigned to be able to go to a consulting position and help us develop these. The target was 2017, but we're really wanting to push that up to 2016 if possible, because there's just a lot of activity going on there. This next slide shows kind of the value of design guidelines. So this is Block 8L, where the University of Oregon's campus extension is going, and Gerding Edlund's the developer. It's a three-quarter block project that came to the Landmarks Commission this last year. And to the applicant's credit, they did a great job of understanding we don't have these Skidmore Old Town design guidelines in place. So they actually looked at the new draft ones and responded to the commission on that basis, as well as what we had in place. And so we were able to move from this first kind of iteration you see on the top, which really looks like it's a fine building. It looks like something more like that you would see in the brewery blocks, to something that's a little bit more context specific, you know, and really reflects kind of the Italian 8 and the older scale of what's in the adjacent resources. So that's kind of the purpose of the guidelines. Allows us to kind of have those kind of discussions on a more finite level, essentially.
The next priority was the implementation of a new HRI, and that's been a topic of conversation, I think, for several years before council, and I think that the primary obstacle is just identifying a funding source in order to implement it. But one of the things that's really difficult to do is to make sound planning decisions in regards to your historic resources when you're dealing with information that's about 35 to 40 years old. You know, during that period, other buildings have kind of come into the next round of significance that maybe are mid-century modern resources, but also, you know, when you look at the 500 demolitions that have occurred in the city over the past year, I don't know if we could truly say whether or not any of those resources were significant or not, principally because they are either uninventoried or just not considered within this kind of larger planning realm. And a revision to the HRI would help the city to make more sound planning decisions, both at the comprehensive level and on the permit level, in regards to resources situated within the city. So.
And as Commissioner, or staff member Tim Herron mentioned, that was why the purpose of meeting with Survey LA was really to understand what other jurisdictions are doing, and they're quite advanced in being able to do GIS kind of mapping with this, so it's all integrated into the whole computerized, basically the Bureau of Element Services type system. So that's something that we were hoping the city can explore, and we're working again with Bureau of Planning and Sustainability on how to identify that, how much would it cost, and, you know, really get our arms around what that would look like.
And just to add one more thing, I think it would certainly help with the predictability of development. It would allow developers, property owners, and as well as citizens better understand the decisions behind a development project. Because I think if folks knew how significant the resources were to the community up front, then we wouldn't be confronted with situations down the line that are made, you know, that come to the fore at the last minute and become contentious, perhaps unnecessarily. So.
That slide just kind of shows anything before, I think it's 1950 is red, correct? And then gold is 1950-ish. So kind of see, it's a lot of resources, really, and all of East Portland really hasn't been surveyed, so that kind of predated the survey.
Yep. And then I think as what's happened in other jurisdictions, too, you can focus, you know, you can obviously phase an HRI over several years, and you can focus the HRI in areas that may experience the most intense new redevelopment, and basically try to do blocks of the city in that manner so that over time you eventually get coverage, but you address coverage in the areas that are most likely experience change over in the very near future.
So priority four is, not surprising, unreinforced masonry resources. So obviously this is a really important public safety item as well as a cultural resource protection item. We want to see these buildings survive the next big event and also make sure that they're not going to, you know, be torn down because it's too cost prohibitive to upgrade them too. So,
can I say something?
Yeah.
I believe that's the old Leech Pharmacy
in
Foster.
Yep.
And there keeps being signs of life there. What is there something planned for that location?
That's a good question. I can tell you a little more insight because I actually worked for the owner, which is Buck of Buck's Stove Palace. He's quite the character. But we did quite a bit of work on that, and it does need a seismic upgrade. And that's part of the challenge in that particular area is they're just on the edge of development. So they've tried several things, and it just quite hasn't gotten off the ground yet, is my latest understanding, but I'm not sure.
Because that was the place where the Leach family of Leach Botanical Garden had their business. Is this,
yeah.
Does this have some historical designation, too?
It's not actually officially listed in the as a National Historic Landmark, but it would easily be listable. We actually did research on that, and because of the Leach Botanical connection and the unique architecture with the clinker brick and the radius facade, it's a pretty significant, iconic resource there. And it's also kind of your typical challenge of what we're up against with a lot of these historic masonry resources. They're historic with a lowercase h. A lot of them aren't listed yet, so they don't have any real protection. And as we're seeing development pressure increase, especially moving to the east side, that's where a lot of these are, it doesn't necessarily pencil, like I might say, the Pearl District to rehab that building into a seismic upgrade. So if it's only based on the pro forma, then a lot of times the historic resource is going to lose, you know. But it's in everybody's interest, really, to upgrade that, both on the cultural side going forward, but also on the public safety side. So trying to identify, like, what is that strategy going to be? And I know that's really the point of this commission that we're talking about, too, on the task force.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, we have to anticipate there may be some tough choices, because we will try to identify whatever resources we can to assist in retrofitting buildings, rather than tearing them down. But I wouldn't rule out the possibility there might be some cases where it appears prohibitively expensive to do the retrofits and the building is really dangerous. And so in some cases, demolition might be the only practical option.
Yeah, we would probably agree with that, I think. And back to Kirk's point, is getting a better understanding of what we even have so we can start to rank those resources. And we just don't want to lose things that we don't even know about, you know. So that's... it's definitely going to be a challenge. I mean, I work with a lot of private development on adaptive reuse and the seismic. And, you know, it's one thing to rehab a project that's part of, without getting too deep in the weeds, it's part of an overall project upgrade. Like, say, if this one were to be given new life and you're going to gut it out and redo it. It's another thing if it's fully occupied, then, you know, how does that part work, you know? And so that's been what we've been talking about, is how to phase that in and be realistic about that without causing too much turmoil, essentially, with what's going on there. So.
The fifth priority is balancing preservation and density. And you may hear this a little bit later with some of the folks who will be testifying about this issue. But one of the things to keep in mind is the demolition of homes is not necessarily linked to density. I think only about 10% of the demolitions that have occurred in the city are related to multifamily housing, as opposed to just a change like for like. So you're swapping out a single-family residential for a single-family residential. So it's not necessarily a preservation versus density battle. It's more of a sustainability and a conservation of resource issue. And I think that it's also a neighborhood livability issue as well, especially when you have new dwellings being constructed that are of disproportionate scale and massing. There's a fundamental change to the character of a neighborhood. And again, without an HRI, we don't know kind of what the impact is from a historic district standpoint, because there's several areas of the city that are ideal potential historic districts, but their integrity is harmed every time there's a demolition that occurs within that neighborhood.
Okay, so back again is our Portland Preservation Watch List, which we kind of tracked this ongoing in the last, I think, seven addresses, actually. So kind of a quick snapshot of buildings on there. The one in the center right is the Portland Gas and Coke building, which was on there last year and has been demolished since. So really kind of Chinatown is where a lot of, Chinatown's where a lot of the pressure lies over there. So.
Is that the post office?
Yes, I think that is. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, just in terms of that area will be ripe for redevelopment, but it was actually determined eligible by the Keeper of the National Register, which means it's not a listed landmark again, but it's just a federal characterization. There was a memorandum of agreement signed and a mitigation package proposed, and that mitigation package has almost been completed. So,
how does that city just took up, you know, first stage of a deal to acquire that site down the road with the explicit intent of developing it? So how does that impact what the city's been thinking about?
Great question.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really, because it's not a landmark and it's not National Register listed. It's just eligible.
But could it be listed since it's a public resource? Or I mean, because that's a great question you have, Commissioner Fish, because, I mean, that's kind of what happened with Memorial Coliseum and what we've seen with some of these properties that we don't associate necessarily as being historic on the common sense because they're mid-century, and it's kind of that next frontier of things that are coming forward. And once it's a publicly owned property, it could be listed, I would think, by public process.
Well, the one big difference is a sturdy majority of the council has consistently said they want to save Memorial Coliseum. We have explicitly said we're going to redevelop the site where the post office is if we acquire that site, so they are different.
Right. That's why it's good that it's not listed.
Yeah, right. I'm only bringing this up just because I think that, you know, that's what the HRI helps understand, like, maybe if it's listable, then you kind of know going in that, okay, this is something we need to strategize around. I don't think we have a position one way or the other on that. I'm just bringing that up because Memorial Coliseum was kind of slated for redevelopment at one point, and then it was listed, and this kind of bigger conversation ended up happening around that, which changed course, essentially. I mean, that was going to be the ballpark, so... Some of the key projects we reviewed, you guys know this one as well as we do probably, the Washington Park and Mount Tabor Reservoirs.
By the way, thank you for the work that was done on that. I mean, the idea that we would have a soft landing on both and considerable community support for the plans going forward and ones that were very thoughtfully constructed. In fact, Commissioner Fritz was so moved, she gave out a Spirit of Portland Award last night on one of them. But... a few years ago, I'm not sure I would have anticipated a soft landing on both, and now we have something where, with the help of Landmarks, I think we probably got it right.
Yeah, and I think there was a lot of careful conversation around both of these and productive, and I think in the end, I think the community process was well served there. So these are some of the bigger kind of infill development type projects we're looking at. Both of these are in the Alphabet District. One's a half block, and the other is basically a quarter block. So a lot of times people think, oh, we're just reviewing historic resources. But actually, right now, one of the key things we're reviewing are infill development projects because there's so much pressure for development. And that's where the design guidelines become really key because that's the dialogue you're going to have with that developer. And the developer wants to have certainty also going in because developers don't like risk, of course. And so knowing, you know, what to expect really helps define what they can do, and they appreciate that. So these are more historic resources that are being remodeled or adaptively reused that we reviewed last year. Chinatown and downtown. Downtown and then on Chinatown, the Grove project. We're really excited about this one. That one passed with just a pretty narrow margin. It was a 3-2 split vote. I think that it's going to be a huge catalyst for the district, and it's at the same time saving the historic resource of the Grove building, so we're really excited about it. But I would also say that this was a challenging discussion that we had at the Landmarks Commission because, again, there's absolutely no guidelines for Chinatown. It just defaults to River District, which is not specific at all. And so, you know, basically what happens is you're kind of having a reactionary discussion both with the public, the developer, and the commission on, you know, what size is appropriate here, what kind of development is appropriate. And, you know, the 9-story building in the background was pretty controversial. And then we're facing this right now, and the example on the top's a recent design advice request. It's not an actual hearing yet, but, you know, we're looking at Grand Avenue Historic District now as kind of another frontier, and all the buildings are really 2 and 3 stories with the exception of the Weatherly Building. It's kind of a classic commercial little main street when it was its own East Portland, and now we've got this proposal on the top, you see, which is this humongous resource coming in there, and, you know, how is that going to impact this traditional main street feel, and is that appropriate? So that's really a dialogue that's happening right now at the Landmarks Commission. And then this is an unfortunate one, but the Historic Resource Inventory Index is great, but it doesn't really allow any protections right now. And in fact, right now we've got a little bit of a snafu in the code. At least we think it's a snafu, and I think it's at the city's attorney's office right now to discuss about whether there's a reason that there's the 120-day demolition stay has been somehow removed out of the code. I think the code speaks in 2 different ways. I know Restore Oregon's going to talk in more intelligently than I can here on the legal parts of that, but this project, the Workman Temple Building on the bottom, and then the Lotus Building, which is less historically significant, but still was on the historic resource inventory. Both were removed at the owner's request from the historic resource inventory and essentially can proceed with demolition immediately. And the Workman Temples building, if you were to list like top 15 coolest architecture buildings downtown, that one's probably on the list. And it's going to be shocking, I think, and not reflect well on the city's values of cultural integrity and preservation if that building goes away. It's cited right now for a full block hotel development, which would remove both of those assets. And the Design Commission's hearing a design advice request from the applicant, I believe Thursday. Landmarks Commission's forwarded a letter strongly advising that they find in the plan guidelines that, you know, removing historic assets and stuff don't better meet the comp plan goals. But really, that's our only avenue to try to protect these resources at this point. So it's kind of alarming. I think that's all we have.
Great. Well, thank you both. Questions? We really appreciate your work. This is a lot of work as volunteers. For those of you who've been on the commission for 8 years or less, it's still a lot of work, and it's really important. And as you said, it's probably never been more important given the pace of change that we're dealing with now and we'll be dealing with for as far as we can see. So it's pretty important that we get it right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time.
I think we probably have a sign-up sheet for others that want to speak to this report.
Yes, we have 13 people signed up.
Okay.
The first three, please come on up, are Peggy Moretti, Brandon Spencer-Hartle, and Carrie Richter.
You. Good afternoon.
Hello. Good afternoon.
All right, she'll probably need a little help from Carla with our arcane system for
and that'll come up at the last testimony, so we have a few
okay.
minutes on that.
Okay, go ahead then, Peggy, please.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Peggy Moretti. I'm the Executive Director of Restore Oregon. We're a nonprofit that works statewide to preserve and pass forward Oregon's historic resources and promote livable communities. So I'm here on behalf of my organization to endorse the report given by the Landmarks Commission and reiterate the need for an updated historic resources inventory, because you certainly cannot manage assets, and these are assets, if you don't know what you have and where it is. So speaks for itself. I also have some additional comments and observations and recommendations just to share today. I think it's really important we note some of the positive things that have gone on, and some really good projects have taken place that enrich our city both culturally and economically. They include the restoration of the 511 building as the new headquarters for PNCA, the transformation of Washington High School as creative office space and an events venue, and the revival of the Erickson Saloon and Fritz Hotel as much-needed mixed-income housing in Old Town. All of these projects illustrate preservation at its best, and they received the 2015 Demuro Award from Restore Oregon just this last Friday. Other projects in the Skidmore District that we're very heartened by are the Society Hotel and the proposed infill project next to the New Markets Theater, which I know they're looking at reincorporating some of the historic cast iron. That is all really, really good news, and you may recall we had listed the Skidmore District as an endangered place a few years ago, and I think we have some really good indicators that that district is on the rise, and we're really, really glad for that. However, on the negative side, we do remain, as Brian said, in the midst of a demolition epidemic, and our phones are ringing off the hook about that. It's really chewing away at the character of many older Portland neighborhoods. You may know that Restore Oregon reviews copies of all the residential demolition requests. We know we're on pace to lose at least 400 single-family homes this year, and only 9% of them are having any impact on increasing density. So there's stuff going on that isn't necessarily achieving bigger goals. We do think some small steps of progress have been made in that arena, such as defining demolition, establishing a minimum delay period, but we really do need a lot more. The market has created financial incentives for demolition, so we need to balance that out a bit with some disincentives. And the demolition epidemic is, as we were seeing in the closing slides there from the Landmarks Commission, it is now spreading to downtown. the pending application to demolish the Lotus Cafe building and the Workman's Temple. And I just have to say, it's just patently absurd. I'm not going to mince words. It's absurd that these buildings could come down without so much as one bit of public comment or conversation about that. My colleague, Brandon Spencer Hartle here, is going to speak to some more detail on the contradictory loophole in our code that is allowing that to happen. But what a loss this would be to the historic fabric of our city. And we should not be rewarding property owners who have let their buildings sit there and disintegrate for decades, and then they claim it can't be saved. This is, I think, a case of demolition by neglect. And I don't think people should be profiting from that. I think we would be in a better position to see buildings like the Workman's Temple restored and repurposed, and districts like Japantown, Chinatown revived if a few more things were in place. In the area of carrots and sticks, we do need financial incentives for seismic retrofitting and the flexibility to do upgrades in phases. This is the cost on, when you put that on top of rehabilitation, that often keeps historic buildings sitting there in a fallow state. You probably remember that we would be proposing a state historic rehab incentive, and Restore Oregon brought forth legislation in the last session that received the city support. Thank you very much for that. Although we couldn't find funding for it there in the Capitol. And I'm hoping you will join with us in keeping the pressure on for that. That still needs to happen. And as proposed, and I assume would be similar to what would come forward in the future, it would be a 20% rebate for historic rehabilitation. And that's particularly important for the smaller historic buildings that don't attract deep-pocketed developers to do the work.
Peggy, I'll get you to wrap up because we're running out of time.
Sorry. I think some other ideas that we need to consider is an ordinance that prohibits demolition by neglect. There are a lot of cities that have that. I think that's an idea we should explore. I do appreciate the idea about a tax on demolition. We need to make sure that we do enforce meaningful demolition delay periods that allow conversations about alternatives to demolition. And we definitely need those design guidelines, both in the residential infill arena, in the Skidmore District, Japantown, Chinatown. That kind of clarity helps make it easier for these historic projects to happen and the compatible infill to happen. So we thank you very much for inviting our input in so many of the different commissions and task force that have been going on over the past year. And we look forward to contributing more good ideas to preserve our historic assets as we also build for the future.
Thank you. Please keep those coming.
Actually, Ms. Moretti, can I ask a question?
Yes.
On the term demolition epidemic, I'd like to get a sense of what you think is sort of like a normal and acceptable amount of demolition. I mean, you don't expect the average house to last for 1,000 years, so if 0.1% of all houses are coming down every year, that to me at least would seem kind of normal. You expect houses to last for more than 10 years, so if 10% of all houses are being torn down every year, then obviously that would be an epidemic. Where do you think, what do you think is like a normal level, what's a demolition disease, and what rises to an epidemic in terms of percentages of houses?
Well, we clearly have a very rapidly increased number of demolitions, and so many of those demolitions are on houses and structures that have a lot of good life left in them. It's one thing if it's something that's just, like you say, has run its course and it doesn't have much value left in it. And there are some of those. I mean, certainly not every one of these houses that's come down should have been kept. But there's an awful lot of very good, lots of good use left in it, places that are being demolished. And to me, that's what's out of whack here, out of balance.
But what's a lot? I mean, what percentage of the housing stock do you think of as a lot? Or does it not matter? I mean, if 10 good houses are being torn down, is that an epidemic,
well,
even though it's a small number?
When you see, well, I don't know what the right percentage should be. To me, I think there is something of a value judgment in that. But the acceleration that we have seen, I don't think is average at all. And I think it's probably tripled. Is what we've seen. I mean, every single day we receive demolition applications in our mail, 2 to 4 every single day. That seems like a lot. That does seem like a lot to me.
Yeah, I mean, one way to look at it, I mean, it's a fair question, Steve. If you believe that a well-constructed wood frame house can last 300 years. And since my parents-in-law live in a 250-year-old wood frame house in New Hampshire that looks like it's going to be around for at least another 100 years, then maybe 400 houses a year statistically is the right rate. But, of course, we don't have any 250-year-old houses in Portland. So we're tearing down houses that are 100 years old and are at the first third of their useful life, even if you just look at that on a statistical basis. So we're at that replacement rate 200 years early.
Yeah. The average age, I believe, of the demolished house, if I'm not mistaken, is about 1920. So it's both historic. It's got some really good materials in it, and I would say in many of the cases, it had a lot more life to it.
Brandon, welcome.
Mayor Hales, commissioners, I'm here today to talk about what it means to be a historic resource. But I wanted to start by saying that Portland is fortunate to have a Landmarks Commission as talented and as dedicated as we have. I work around the state with the 70-some communities that have Landmarks Commissions, and what we have here is a treasure. The City of Portland recognizes four categories of historic resources: National Register properties, local landmark properties, conservation properties, and historic resource inventory properties. The inventory was adopted by the Landmarks Commission in 1984. It includes approximately 5,000 properties. Unfortunately, since 2002, properties on the historic resource inventory have been able to be demolished without any protection or any delay period as prescribed by the zoning code. This provision of the code, Title 33445510, subsection B, was inserted in 2002 as part of a larger package of amendments altering the zoning code. This provision allows owners of historic resource inventory properties, like the one on the screen we'll show in a second, to be removed on the same day that their owners request removal. While historic resource inventory properties are included in the zoning code as a type of historic resource and subject to a 120-day demolition delay, this code loophole allows those property owners to come off the inventory. Since 2002, over 170 properties have come off of the inventory in this way. Most of those properties are smaller single-family houses, commercial stores, the kinds of things that historic preservationists don't notice until after they're gone. On November 5th, two properties that you can see from the front door of City Hall were removed from the inventory with an expectation of demolition. Unfortunately, once they're off of the inventory, because of our state's unique owner consent law, there is no opportunity to designate the resources or protect them with the type of expertise that the Landmarks Commission can offer. More to the point, once a property is off of the inventory, it's no longer subject to some of the documentation and salvage requirements that would otherwise be expected for a demolition proposal for a property on the inventory. In our estimation, allowing properties to come off of the inventory without any notice, hearing, or delay cripples the ability of the historic preservation community to meaningfully engage with property owners and with the development community to find alternatives to demolition. The removal of the Ancient Order of United Workmen's Temple and the Lotus Cafe on November 5th represents maybe the most egregious use of this loophole since 2002. The memo in front of you describes how this commission can easily close the loophole in the short term while we consider how we would update the inventory in the long term. And I'll stop there.
So does state law not require us to take a property off if the owner asks?
So the state owner consent law requires for local designations the owner to provide their consent for that local designation.
But the law
goes on to explain that any owner who refuses consent is required to wait 120 days before modifying or demolishing that structure.
That's to put it on, though. What's the rules for taking a designation off?
So that is an item that we've been engaging with at the state Supreme Court, and actually this commission has included the city attorney here in that discussion, because there is still a legal question as to which owners can request removal from historic designation. In the past, it was assumed that only that owner who had the designation imposed on them could request removal, though a case out of Lake Oswego broadened that interpretation to potentially any owner who can request removal. So that actually just a week ago yesterday was at oral arguments in state Supreme Court to determine that question of who can come off.
So I'll be interested from our city attorneys later to know, is there something in the interim while this court case is pending that we could do to protect those two resources that you've noted?
And I'll say one more thing.
The 120 delay, though, should still apply, even if they pull it.
That 120 days for an organization like ours, while it might not save every building, does have the opportunity to provide a feasibility study or to understand the true seismic risk of a building and the relative trade-offs that could be accomplished with a community dialogue. So even at a bare minimum, if the code allowed for that 120 days, we could right now be engaging in discussions rather than here reacting to something that we can't control.
So the proposed, you have on the back of your testimony a proposed council action, and you propose that we strike sub B of 33.445.510. Would that have the effect of then providing a 120-day clock before it can be taken off?
It would, and that would be, in our estimation, the right response to both state law and the remainder of the zoning code, which does specifically say historic resource inventory properties are subject to a 120-day delay.
This is not directly before us right now, but if the council was persuaded to do that, we could not apply it retroactively to any property that has been delisted, correct?
I wouldn't imagine so in a legislative action, but Carrie Richter will follow my testimony up and might have more insight.
Just guessing, we can't. That sounds like something we can't do, but we could certainly entertain whether we want to make this change going forward and perhaps even have a hearing on it.
That'd be great.
Please.
By the way, why you said that it was part of a package that we adopted in 2002, and my memory isn't that good. Actually, I wasn't actually on the council then.
That's so okay.
I have it's worse than I thought. Was this an issue in the package that was clearly framed for council consideration? Was this a considered action, or is this part of an omnibus action that did not get the attention you think it deserved?
That's a good question, and I probably have less reference because I had my learner's permit at the time, so it was a long time ago. But my understanding from the records from those deliberations is that there's no in the official records from the stakeholder advisory committee and the discussions around the broader package of code changes, I can't find any language explaining why that subsection was added, other than to assume it was a response to the 1995 owner consent law that maybe only read part of that law. But it's interesting because the rest of those code changes are full of track change notes from commission members and city staff.
And it certainly is contradictory. It's contradicting the clear intent there of the whole of putting in the 120-day delay. Why would you have that if you could instantly remove it? So it doesn't make sense.
Okay, thank you.
You've called this to our attention in a very useful way.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and Commission. My name is Carrie Richter. I am an attorney at the law firm Garvey Schubert Bear, but I was also the chair of the Portland Landmarks Commission and served an 8-year term. And I want to myself congratulate Chair Emmerich for leading the commission in a masterful way upon my retirement. And I am so grateful to them for all the work they have done and taking on the policy charges in a lot of ways that I think as a commission we were not able to do in terms of being involved proactively in the new comprehensive plan, the quadrant planning, and this unreinforced masonry work, I think is wonderful. So that's sort of my first point. My second point is I was the attorney representing Restore Oregon and representing the City of Portland on the Carmen House case, the Lake Oswego case that has to do with the owner consent law. Oral argument did happen last week, and I think we are all encouraged that is going to turn out to be something that the Supreme Court understands that the owner consent law was only intended to apply to the owner at the time the designation was imposed and was not intended to carry forward. We've identified about 1,700 designated resources in Portland that are at risk of delisting by subsequent owners if the Supreme Court rules the way the Court of Appeals does. Third point, I want to just follow up on the demolition code revision issue that Restore Oregon has raised. And I want to point out that there is ambiguity within your code already. Commissioner Fish pointed out the provision that Restore Oregon wants removed. There is another provision a little further down in the code that 33.445.520A2 that says issuance of a demolition permit after demolition review, this is for HRI resources, requires 120-day delay. And in the case of the Ancient Order United Workmen Temple and the Hotel Albion, both of those, design review advice has happened to take down these buildings already. City staff knew the intent was to demolish the buildings. If we know the intent is to demolish the buildings, it seems to me that the appropriate review standard would have been this one I just read to you that would have subjected this resource to a 120-day delay. It is not as though the city didn't know that these buildings were going to come down. And I think that that's a real problem, that first of all necessitates amending the code, and second of all being more rigorous until we get the code amended when these applications come in, because it is not as though these folks are just wanting to come off. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Carrie. Thank you all. Okay, let's take the next three folks, please.
Next are Kathy Galbraith, and she'll be coming with Denise McGriff and Mary Helen Kincaid.
Good afternoon. Why don't you go ahead and get started, Mary Helen, while Kathy and Denise are getting ready.
Okay. Last time I was here, we were Commissioner Novick. Said had a great quote, and George Brett said, "Go Royals," and they went, and now they're world champions. So I hope I score a World Series win here. I wanted to comment that I am here as Mary Helen Kincaid citizen, and a common issue, though, I sit on DRAC, and a common issue that DRAC, the Demolition Task Force, council testimony, neighborhood meetings, and information shared with City Council and their staff is that there are houses and neighborhoods that are significant. Not necessarily historic, but significant. And some have the potential to be saved, but neighborhoods don't have a capacity to deal with the process that's in place. There are currently no tools to do that, and the tools we've been trying to use are not adequate. Neighborhoods are frustrated. We don't have the right tools to identify what people believe are significant, and how do we get to that desired future outcome of saving those significant houses? My last testimony, I said I had a plan. And we have, and I've discovered a tool that it assists neighborhoods and save some houses from demolitions. It identifies houses that are significant and possible targets for demolition because of their lot configuration, their historic nature, or just significance. It uses a variety of data resources, one of which is the HRI, and we all have heard and know that the HRI is in need of great revision. The Historic Landmarks Commission report mentions that the work of the Demolition Task Force and how it addressed the issues of demolition, notification, and the appeals process, and urges for continuing funding to support the compliance. While compliance is good, it's not going to stop demolitions. Six appeals have been filed, three were granted the extension, and no houses have been saved. A group of concerned neighborhood land use activists involved with those six appeal cases, and including Brandon from Restore Oregon, who headed the effort, has created a toolkit of best practices for filing an appeal and extending the delay period for a total of 95 days. To appeal at this stage when the developer has already invested a considerable amount of money and contracts are in place is not the best way to save a house. The appeal process frustrates everyone and even the hearings officer. The HRI is currently the only reference point for neighborhoods to determine significance, and by all accounts, it is outdated and some of those are not so good tools. I agree that the HRI needs to have the start over button hit, and I believe the project we are proposing would save houses, is ready to go now, and would enhance the work of any future efforts of the HRI. Quoting the Landmark Commission report, a revised historic resource inventory would bring the city's interest to maintaining neighborhood livability to the forefront and would allow neighborhoods to explore their historical identities through a grassroots and well-planned inventory effort. We are there now. We just need to help the neighborhoods in their efforts. We've presented this project to Paul Scarlett, Director of BDS, Commissioner Saltzman's staff, and we're scheduled to present it to the staff from the Mayor's Office and Commissioner Novick's office, and Susan Anderson and Joe Zender of BPS. We think it would augment the work being proposed by the Historic Landmarks Commission for the new position of Historic Preservation Planner. But that project will focus solely on historic. And while this hearing is about the HLC and HRI, our project can enhance those efforts by having a broader look at neighborhood livability and significance. The project will give neighborhoods, developers, and landowners the tool to start the conversation before the demolition permit is filed. It'll be non-regulatory, and it won't create a fine, a tax, or a charge. It'll be preemptive and help preserve neighborhood character and those houses deemed significant. It's a positive approach to saving houses by laying groundwork for future work to preserve historic residential structures we don't even know about. This is an opportunity to do what Paul Hawkins says in his quote, "Good management is the art of making problems so interesting and their solutions so constructive that everyone wants to get to work and deal with them." You'll hear a little testimony a little later from Mike Molinaro, who created this project, but just think it's an excellent opportunity.
Thank you. We look forward to hearing your proposal. That's great. Denise, welcome.
Welcome. Good afternoon. I'm Denise McGriff, and I have the privilege of representing the state of Oregon on the Board of Advisors for the National Trust for Historic Preservation. But today, I'm here representing the Advocacy Committee for the Bosco Milligan Foundation, and I won't go into a great deal of detail, but the committee strongly supports the recommendation that the Historic Landmarks Commission and Restore Oregon have recommended to you regarding removal of the zoning code section that allows property owners to remove their HRI designation. I'd like to briefly depart from that testimony and give you a little personal observation. Last year, I attended the Historic Preservation Program's McMath Awards, and you all know about George McMath and his history here with the city in starting our Historic Preservation Program. Leo G. Williams was the recipient of the award. During Leo's presentation and discussion about all the work he and George did together to start that program, I was disturbingly reminded of how far we have not gone in the city of Portland to do all the work that I think George envisioned, Leo envisioned, and our late friend Art DeMuro envisioned. I really urge you to seriously implement all of the recommendations that the Landmarks Commission has proposed to you, because they are the foundation of this city's program. And we have so much to be thankful for in terms of the resources of this city. As you recall, in 2005, the National Trust was hosted in the city of Portland. And when I go to conferences, which I just came back from DC, they're still talking about the Portland Conference, which is great, because that says something real good about what we did. I really urge you to not only talk the talk about our preservation program here in the city of Portland, but to walk the walk and implement these changes. Thank you.
Thank you. Kathy, welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Galbraith, and I'm the executive director of the Bosco Milligan Foundation, and we own and operate the Architectural Heritage Center at 701 Southeast Grand Avenue. It's the oldest building in the Grand Avenue East Portland Historic District, and we're well aware of all of the threatened developments in our immediate environment. In addition to commenting on support for the Historic Landmarks Commission's 7th annual report, I'm here to focus on the emergency that is happening, where our vintage buildings are disappearing, being deliberately erased at a rate never before seen in the city of Portland, probably since the Lewis and Clark Exposition. All of that time, we were building new buildings and not demolishing what was old. We, of course, support the recommendations and the comments of Landmarks Commission's report about design guidelines for Skidmore Old Town and seismic upgrades for vintage and historic buildings. But the epidemic of demolitions that continues to rage through the city is, unfortunately, the conclusion that's reached by BDS in the Landmarks Commission's report is that the city is balancing the concerns of the various stakeholders. And we disagree with that, because only demolitions in low-density residential zones are subject to the review, and we receive all of those notices, so we know what the magnitude of those are. But we're also paying attention to all of the demolition applications. There are at least as many demolitions happening of buildings that are not in low-density residential zones, and we're losing a tremendous number of vintage and historic buildings without any delay or a review. You've heard a lot of discussion about the status of Portland's historic resources inventory and all the flawed issues around its lack of a formal evaluation and adoption when it was finished, and I don't need to go into that. But we have a process that's essentially voluntary, and for a city of the caliber of Portland to be the single city with this weak and ineffective process, it's really a national embarrassment when I deal with my colleagues around the country who just cannot believe that our program is as weak and ineffective as it is, given Portland's reputation on a number of other fronts. There's a particular concern I want to bring to your attention today, and that is in 2010, BPS engaged my organization to update our continuing Cornerstones African American Buildings History Documentation Project, which we started in 1993. It was to be used in the work on the North-Northeast Quadrant Plan to protect and identify African-American historic resources, but nothing was done after we provided the update. We found that 10 of the original 1,284 standing buildings that we had identified had been demolished between 1998 and 2010. That was over a 12-year period. More recently, we've been looking at all of the demolition applications and the impacts those are having on our Cornerstones inventory, and we've done a very preliminary review, and which shows that at least 12 of the African-American historic resources have been demolished between 2010 and August of 2015, with a startling acceleration in 2015. And, of course, none of these buildings are subject to any delay, and there's no protection from them. So we have our work cut out for us, and I know all of you, you have incredible tolerance to sit here and listen to us go on and on and on about our favorite subject, and this is one of thousands of issues that you're obligated to deal with, and you know, you have tremendous tolerance. I try to come down here as little as possible to bother you about things. But, you know, Portland's beloved reputation, its character, its quality of life, its place that everybody wants to be is in large part based on what the city feels like. And the way that it feels like is based on what it looks like. And what it looks like is based in large part on its natural character and its building character. And we just can't afford to risk squandering that building character by not paying enough attention to the resources that my profession cares about, and I know you do too.
Kathy, first of all, we never tire of hearing from you. Thank you. Second, I've lived in cities that committed egregious acts of civic vandalism, and they continually, even to this day, look back and regret that they either allowed historic structures to be demolished or demolished to neglect or whatever. One thing I will say, though, is that because we have so much coming at us, it does strike me that when we identify one or two or three distinct, discrete things that we're asked to do, it's more likely that we'll do it. So like earlier, we heard a particular statutory problem about the 120-day clock, and we have a proposed remedy. Well, we could tackle that very quickly and put something in place. And there's some other things here that seem very targeted, so I just... my sense is that the more we identify a specific problem and outcome and we're clear, the more likely that we'll be able to address it in an expeditious manner.
You're here. Thank you very much. Thank you all. I'm going to take a few more folks that want to testify on this. I know there are a lot of people here for the next item, so bear with us. I think we have five or six more people signed up to speak. Let's hear them, and then we'll move on.
I hope you all get a good night's sleep for tomorrow.
Yeah, yes, right. We have a comp plan hearing tomorrow. Speaking of
William Willingham, change. Mike Molinaro, and Allison Clare.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Hi. My name is Bill Willingham. I'm a consulting historian, and I'd like to speak to you today about the need to update the historic resources inventory. And I bring to that some special knowledge in that I was the historian, along with Al Staley, the architect, who did the research that created the very first inventory back in the early 80s. What you all know, but we probably need to think about it again, is the fact that Portland is blessed with a built environment that reflects 150 years of virtually every architectural style has buildings that reflect those. And they're important not only for architecture, but also for their association with culture, with commerce, with ethnic diversity. So what is really key is that we build our knowledge base so that we know what out of that 150 years worth of built environment we need to preserve. And so the inventory is only the first step of that. Then you have to evaluate those properties according to appropriate standards so that you can rank or determine significance. So that when you come to these issues of demolition that present a building in a microcosm, that you know where it fits in that larger universe so that you can make rational decisions. So I just encourage that you, as quickly as possible, find the resources to update that inventory because, as others have pointed out, City of Portland has grown, and we've marched 30 years ahead so that we're now able to evaluate buildings from the 50s and 60s according to the 50-year standard as the cutoff date. And if we don't get that inventory updated, then we can't appropriately deal with these new resources that need to be affected. So I won't take any more time to repeat what others have said, but I think the focus needs to be on updating that inventory. And I'd like to see my work carried on. Thank you
very much. We would, too. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon. I'm Michael Molinaro, and I want to thank Mary Helen for her introduction and referring to me as a tool. I think it's the first time that's ever happened.
She didn't mean it that way.
Yeah. One of the reasons Jan and I moved to Portland 3 years ago was